What's up, world? Welcome to another episode of the APE, known as Ape Academy Podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Chase H. We are back with another excellent, exciting, fabulous episode of our history-based podcast. We've been discussing the history of the African-American service man and woman in combat. We started with the American Revolution. We're going to trace it all the way to the Vietnam War. Really, this series of episodes are a celebration of the extraordinary courage and bravery of the African-American soldier, sailor, airman on the battlefield, okay? So we want to honor them. We're going to continue our Black History Month discussion because Black history is American history. Therefore, it remains relevant 24/7, 365. All right. We got our housekeeping as usual, okay? A few quick messages I want to get out there before I forget. Please follow, rate, and review our podcast, all right? If you follow us, you will receive notifications when new episodes are streaming. All right, so if you're sitting around, you're watching 600 Pound Life, right? You're watching Deal or No Deal, and you hear that chime, that bing, right? Look on the top of your screen of your smartphone, you see the notification banner. It will tell you there's a new episode of the Act Protect Engage, known as Ape Academy Podcast, streaming now, all right? You won't miss an episode. Also, if you have a few minutes to spare, rating us will help us in the rankings, and it will provide valuable audience feedback, all right? So this is really, really important because we look at every single rating, every single review, all right? So it really means a lot because we use that information to make improvements, all right? And if you are feeling really generous, you can write a short review, right? And it's just an expression of your opinion. It can be two freaking words like "this sucks" or "it's awesome," or it could be a dissertation, right? With some, you know, pointers, things I can improve, things I need to take out. So just let us know because we want to give y'all the content that you actually want to hear, all right? And plus, making improvements is always a good thing, especially on this type of medium, all right? Thank you for learning and growing with us. We will always appreciate and love y'all. All right, so we got a few sources. I've said it once, I'll say it again. If you are listening to a history-based podcast and they do not have their sources either listed in the show notes or they, you know, they list them during the podcast, I would look at that podcast, listen to that podcast with a side eye, right? I don't know about this. Same thing with books. Every reputable scholar will have a bibliography listing everything that they got their information, all their sources, primary sources and secondary sources, all right? So this podcast today is going to be based on both primary and secondary sources, all right? So that's important to know. I will put the sources in the show notes, okay? So if you click on the description, let's say Apple Podcasts, for example, you look at the description of the podcast and you keep scrolling, you'll see a notes section. It'll have some really important information in there, all right? One last thing. If you could please follow us on social media, we're on IG at Ape Academy Podcast. That is my personal page as the host. And we also have established an official podcast site, a.p.e History Pod. All right. That's on IG. On TikTok, we have a page called Ape Academy Pod. All right. There's going to be some exclusive material, some photos, pictures, extra descriptions, etc., that won't be available on the podcast because, you know, we just can't fit everything into, you know, 30 minutes of content on this platform. So check it out. All right. So this episode is entitled Enslaved Soldiers in the Battle of New Orleans. Okay, so the Battle of New Orleans was one of the most well-known battles of the early 19th century. It was the last battle of the War of 1812, which we discussed on our last episode. A very, very overlooked, often forgotten war, but that war really played a pivotal role in the shaping of a young republic, right? Early America, right? We have to remember, after the American Revolution, the United States was not, they weren't really ready to take their place among the leaders of nations, right? They were still growing. There was growing pains. There was an identity crisis. A lot of Americans, we'll put that in quotes, still had loyalties to Great Britain. There were a lot of French citizens, especially in New Orleans. So there's like a hodgepodge, kind of melting pot of people in this early nation or in this young growing nation. So when we talk about the War of 1812 and this early period of development, we have to keep that in mind, all right? So there's a lot of growing pains. All right, I'm going to start off the episode with a quote, and this is from one of my sources. It's from the narrative of James Roberts, a soldier under General Washington in the Revolutionary War and under General Jackson at the Battle of New Orleans in the War of 1812. All right, so this is a primary source, all right? The author of this memoir was an enslaved African-American who fought in multiple wars, all right? And this is a key piece of source of information for this battle, all right? Quote, General Jackson, in order to prepare to meet Pakenham, the British general, in the contest at New Orleans, came into our section of the country enlisting soldiers. He came to Calvin Smith's, Ken made a bargain with him to enlist 500 Negroes. Jackson came into the field, chose out the ones he wanted, and then addressed us thus, quote, had you not as soon go into battle and fight as to stay here in the cotton field, dying and never die? If you will go, and the battle is fought and the victory gained on Israel's side, you shall be free. All right, so Jackson was pretty much promising any enslaved African-American who wanted to gain their freedom, he offered them a chance. He offered them an opportunity to fight on the side of the Americans in his army against the British who were marching on New Orleans. And if they did that, he promised them that he would grant their freedom. All right, so that kind of sets the stage for this story. And like I said, this is a direct quote from James Roberts' firsthand account of the Battle of New Orleans. Roberts was born in 1753, and he wrote one of the most detailed narratives of the battle from the perspective of an enslaved person who, under false promises of freedom, sacrificed life and limb to save the city from British torches. Roberts, born into slavery on the eastern shore of Maryland, first belonged to Francis de Shields, a colonel in George Washington's Continental Army. Roberts served alongside his master throughout the war and, quote, helped to scalp and kill many Indians, which he regretted because the poor souls were, quote, fast tending to a position not much better than my own. During the Battle of Roanoke River, Roberts recalled that human blood ran down in torrents till the waters of the river were red as crimson. He also participated in the Battle of Yorktown, which of course is a infamous, well-known battle where he personally witnessed the surrender of Lord Cornwallis, who was the supreme commander of the British forces during the American Revolution. Roberts fought in the American Revolution at the side of his master, who was a colonel. Okay, so this kind of goes and plays into our earlier discussion about enslaved soldiers in Rhode Island who fought for the Patriots. Enslaved people fought in every theater of the American Revolution, right? They fought in the Northern Campaign and they fought in the Southern Campaign. Roberts also fought in the Revolution. All right, so if you want to learn more about African Americans in the American Revolution, we have a few episodes, I think two episodes back. We have two good episodes about that subject, okay? Thousands of blacks, both free and enslaved, played a vital role in the War of 1812. For black folks, the War of 1812 provided a golden opportunity to enhance their social status within a racially polarized nation. Despite performing admirably as selfless patriots during the American Revolution, African Americans remained trapped in permanent second-class status, unable to participate in political life, limited in job opportunities in the North, of course, for freedmen, and generally marginalized from society. Nevertheless, blacks jumped at the chance to defend their homes and their ungrateful nation. Think about that. You are confined to permanent second-class status, yet as soon as you have the opportunity to prove yourself, to fight, you could easily say, you know what, screw these people. They enslave me. They beat me. They curse me. They don't want me around. I'm not going to defend them. They can fend for themselves. African Americans were the first ones often to volunteer to put their lives on the line. For enslaved blacks, enlisting to fight provided a potential pathway to freedom. Unfortunately, promises of freedom proved false in a lot of cases. It was often used as a tactic to recruit blacks into the service while providing no hard guarantees. Mr. Roberts, born into slavery, is an unfortunate example of a man who fought in both the Revolution and the War of 1812, who was motivated by assurances of freedom only to be crushed with disappointment as he was unable to realize his dreams. All right. He remained in bondage despite serving in two wars, and he was promised freedom in the second one. The Battle of New Orleans was the final skirmish in the 2.5-year war between Great Britain and the U.S. Although the Battle of New Orleans was fought 2 weeks after a peace treaty was signed, it is perhaps the foremost example of African-American service during the war. Roughly 500 African-American soldiers fought against the British. Though they were outnumbered 2-1, American forces decisively defeated the vaunted Redcoats, thus helping create the legend of Andrew Jackson as a bona fide American legend. In the fall of 1814, General Andrew Jackson issued a call for black troops to increase his diminished army. He promised free blacks the same wages as white troops. He also promised slaves their freedom at the completion of their service. According to Roberts' memoir, while enlisting African Americans to fight in the war, Jackson went to a Louisiana plantation owned by a Calvin Smith. With Smith's permission, he went into the fields seeking recruits. Enslaved people, wouldn't they rather fight in battle in exchange for freedom than die in the cotton fields? That's the question he asked them. And that was almost like a rhetorical question. Like, of course, I would rather fight and risk death in glorious battle. At least I'm doing something toward gaining my freedom than sit here and wait for some white slave owner to have mercy on me and free me, which almost never happened. For his part, Smith did not stand in their way. In fact, he was relieved that it was his black slaves who enlisted instead of his sons. Smith said to Jackson, quote, "If there are not enough blacks in place of my sons, go to the Springfield plantation and get as many more. If the Negroes should get killed, they are paid for. But if my children should go and get killed, they cannot be replaced." So that was a little bit selfish of him. For him, it was a business decision. You know, he already paid for his slaves. He would rather have them go and fight in his stead and his son's stead than risk his family. Roberts was one of 500 black men recruited by Jackson. Under the direction of Captain Brown of Tennessee, the men were taught basic drill, how to march, charge, utilize their weapons, and many other basic military tactics. When satisfied, Brown began the trek to New Orleans. They marched for over 300 miles. Every man had a sack and a musket. When he reached the swamps in Louisiana, near outside New Orleans, they plunged into smelly, thick, knee-deep water covered in green scum. Disgusting. At night, they slept on small piles of crushed wood and grass while being tormented by mosquitoes and venomous snakes. Many of the white Kentuckians actually died from drinking poisonous swamp water, after which, according to Roberts, an exasperated Jackson remarked, quote, "It is a pity that you white devils did not stay at your homes. The Negroes are no trouble at all. It would have been far better for us to have had no whites, for there is not a day or night that passes that we do not have to dig a hole and bury 5 or 6 of you." All right. I just want to say one thing about primary sources, firsthand accounts, whether it be journals, diaries, memoirs, etc. We have to remember as historians or as history lovers that these people are human. So when they're recollecting their events, sometimes they put their own personal opinion, they insert their own personal opinion into them. There's no way to prove that Jackson said, "You white devils, I wish I never took any of you." But we have to take it, take his word seriously. But, you know, you always want to kind of analyze it as, remember, this is a personal account, often written many years later, often with reflecting kind of the personal experiences and personal opinions of the author. So while many of the events, all the events are true, some of the quotes might be embellished or just flat out made up. All right. After Napoleon's defeat in the spring of 1814, the British were finally free to concentrate their full efforts on the war in America. All right, so before Napoleon was finally defeated at Waterloo and he was sent into exile by the Duke of Wellington, the British could, their attention was split between multiple fronts. They were fighting Napoleon in Europe. They were fighting Napoleon in the Caribbean. They had these annoying Americans bothering them in North America, in Canada, right? So the British were kind of all over the place. But once Napoleon was finally defeated, they were like, okay, now it's time. We can finally focus our full attention, our full military might on these annoying scrub Americans, right? And it's also important to note that at this time, England, or I should say Great Britain, had the most powerful military, some would say, in the history of the world up to this point. All right, their navy was a behemoth, a juggernaut, right? Their army was the most well provisioned, well-trained, disciplined, and motivated troops probably in the entire world. All right, so this is a tall task for the Americans. The strategic focus shifted to the coastal regions and American trade and transportation, culminating in the burning of Washington, D.C., including the White House, in August of 1814. Although unable to take Baltimore the following month, the British continued with a plan to attack New Orleans. Warned of a potential invasion of the Gulf Coast, Andrew Jackson, at the time the commander of the U.S. 7th Military District, left Mobile, Alabama for New Orleans on November 22nd, 1814. Oh, by the way, my pronunciation of New Orleans is going to change throughout this, so I apologize for that in advance. Jackson had been recently promoted to Major General in the Regular Army as a reward for a brutal campaign that crushed the Creek Indians. So Jackson was known as an Indian fighter. That's what he was mainly known as. He was a tough, just frontiersman. He was brutal in battle. He had really, really amazing leadership skills, but he was mainly known as a person who crushed the Native Americans. Reaching the city on December 1st, he began to assemble a force that eventually consisted of Tennessee and Kentucky frontiersmen, Louisiana militia, New Orleans businessmen, free and enslaved African Americans, Choctaw Indians, Marines, and U.S. regular troops. When Jackson received word of the British landing 60 miles east of New Orleans on December 8th, he boldly marched out to meet the enemy. In a daring nighttime strike, the Americans attacked the British camp, and after several hours of heavy but inconclusive fighting, Jackson disengaged and withdrew 2 miles to the Rodriguez Canal. The Americans immediately began constructing earthworks, later known as Line Jackson, that ran perpendicular from the Mississippi River for 3/4 of a mile, ending in a dense cypress swamp. So the Americans were preparing for a major confrontation at this point. All right. Jackson, like I said, was a bold, really, actually, he was a genius military commander. He knew how to motivate his troops. He was always on the front line. He was the first one in the battle. He knew that the Americans had to set the tone by attacking first, right? So he attacks, he withdraws, he sets up this really, really strong defensive line known as Line Jackson, all right? On Christmas Day, General Sir Edward Pakenham, who was the brother-in-law to the Duke of Wellington, assumed command of the British expedition. Pakenham, an able commander, was annoyed by his subordinates' inability to defeat the ragtag band of Americans and capture New Orleans, and decided to move his forces within 5 miles of the city on December 27th. All right, so this is all occurring around Christmas. Following several failed attempts to breach Line Jackson and reassured by the arrival of much-needed reinforcements, Pakenham decided to launch a full-scale frontal assault. On January 8th, the British attack commenced before sunrise. On the British left, Major General John Keane's infantry penetrated an unfinished portion of the line, only to be stopped in their tracks in front of the New Orleans Rifles and 7th U.S. Infantry. Major General Samuel Gibbs' column advanced against the American left center, where his ranks were decimated by witheringly accurate fire of the Tennessee and Kentucky militiamen. During his advance, Gibbs was mortally wounded. In an attempt to rally his men, Pakenham rode forward with his staff, but was hit by an American volley. He later died of his wounds. Of the 3,000 men under Gibbs and Keane, 2,000 were either killed outright or wounded, and this all occurred in less than 30 minutes. This was a lightning quick battle, but a deadly one. A soldier from Kentucky later wrote, quote, "When the smoke had cleared and we could obtain a fair view of the field, it looked at first glance like a sea of blood. It was not blood itself, but the red coats in which the British soldiers were dressed. The field was entirely covered in prostrate bodies." Devastated in front of Line Jackson, the remnants of the British forces withdrew out of the range of American guns. All right, so at this point, I'm going to take a break, and after the break, I'm going to read a really, really just fantastic excerpt from Robert's memoir. And obviously, like I said, sometimes memory, you know, fails a little bit, but it's a great kind of personal recollection of the battle from the perspective of an enslaved soldier. All right, so stick around. We'll be back in a flash. 8. What's up, y'all? I had to get me some water. I had to prepare my notes here. You know, a lot of it is I do a lot of research for the podcast, and so I retain a lot of information, but I also make sure I have my notes in front of me so that I can reference things very quickly. All right. So it's important when you do a podcast like this to always do good, solid research. And this is what we've been doing on the Ape Academy. All right, so this is a quote from Robert's memoir. And this is it's a little bit long, but I really want y'all to get the sense of how tough this battle was, okay? I really want y'all to kind of smell the gunpowder, to hear the horses and the cannons, all right? Because it's, you know, you can't really get a sense of it if you're just reading it or hearing it, all right? "Each general returned to his respective army, and in 20 minutes, the British fired. They fired 3 rounds, and the fourth we opened upon them. Here they began to throw shells into our fort, and they had continued to do so for some time. There is no doubt but victory would have been easy to them, but Pakenham, who headed his army, impatient to carry everything by main force, doubting nothing as to his ability to take the fort in a short period, rushed forward in quick evolutions, and as they came, we felled them like grass before the scythe. Platoon after platoon lay like scattered hail upon the ground. Packenham, seeing this and observing the rapid loss of his men, marched them single file up to our fort. He himself mounted the wall, encouraging his men in the most energetic manner. And here, at this point of the battle, he might have succeeded, had he exercised some discretion. Instead of ordering the bags to be pushed inside next to us, he ordered them to be pulled outside, which entangled his men. And while in that entanglement, we slew them by scores and piled them by hundreds upon the bags as they endeavored to climb over them. While this was going on in the main body of our fort, the left wing of the fort gave way, which brought us and the British in immediate contact with the broadsword, and they fell before us like grass before the scythe. At this point, I lost the forefinger of my left hand and received a deep wound on my head from a British sword. And after that, I took the fellow's head off and five more of his fellow soldiers. Packenham, at that moment, was shot from the wall, and in 2 minutes, the red flag was hauled down and the white one hoisted. The battle ceased and victory declared on our side. Jackson, who during the battle had taken a stand at some distance, ordering his men by an aide-de-camp, came up to the line and gave us three cheers, and observing me to be all over bloody, asked me what was the matter with me. I told him not anything, for I had not yet discovered the loss of my finger, nor the wound upon my head. He said, quote, "You have lost one of your fingers and received a deep wound upon your head. Go to the hospital and have your wounds dressed." I did so and returned to him and asked him to let me go on the side of the British and see the slain. He said, "Go where you please. The ground is free to you and all yours." I went and saw the slain lying 1/4 mile as thick as they could lie upon the ground. And I walked shoe deep in blood that distance and back. Some of the poor fellows were dead, some dying, some half dead, some cut in half and still living. And as I passed by them, they granted their teeth at me and made efforts to come at me. We were ordered to bury the slain of the British. We dug trenches and pulled them in with our grab hooks, whether they were dead or still breathing. We were ordered to cover up the devils, whether dead or alive, which we did, and tramped them down with our feet into the blood and the water. Knee deep, we then buried our own dead, pulling them into coffins and burying them in the city. That is a extremely vivid and exciting almost account of the battle. And as I recalled before I read the quote, the battle was quick and it was devastating for the British. The British were very, very disciplined. They were very hard fighters. They had good morale. But the same thing that made them an effective infantry fighting force also made them very vulnerable. The British were very robotic. They had a hard time adapting on the fly. They had a very hard time being flexible in their tactics. So when they were ordered forward, there was no one there to say, hey, this isn't working. Let's go around the flank. Let's retreat and try again. Let's split half our... No, it was a forward assault, a slow march. You know, there's a famous British unit, the Highlanders, who in their front line, they had a band with bagpipes and drums with a huge guidon, which is like a British flag and their unit flag. They had these tall hats that made them seem 10 feet tall. And they were fierce warriors. They were called Wellington's heroes, right? They were from the army of the Duke of Wellington who had just defeated Napoleon. So they were legends. They didn't think they could be defeated. They didn't think the Americans had the ability, had the balls, had the stomach for battle with them, man on man. But they proved that they did, and they paid dearly for their overconfidence. All right? Roberts estimated that 60 to 70 black men were killed in battle. Unfortunately, Jackson did not honor his promises of freedom. Right? Not surprising. At the conclusion of the battle, Roberts confronted the general and incensed by the deception, nearly shot Jackson dead on the spot. Like, I don't know, like we said, remember, memoirs, not sure, but I can believe the anger. I would have done the same thing. Quote, I asked him if he did not promise me my freedom, if that battle was fought and victory gained. He replied, I did, but I took your master's word, as he told me. You are not my property, and I cannot take another man's property and set it free. At that moment, I cocked my gun, but there being no priming in it, it did not fire. Had my gun been loaded, doubtless Jackson would have been a dead man in a moment. It was well for him that he took the precaution to have our guns unloaded when in the ammunition house. His guilty conscience smote him and told him he was doing us a great piece of injustice, end quote. You can see here his frustration, because this is the second time that Roberts was fighting in a war and thought he could gain his freedom by fighting for the American cause, and he was once again disappointed. Echoing the experiences of enslaved African Americans during the American Revolution, Roberts and his fellow bondsmen sacrificed everything for a chance at liberty, a chance to experience the lofty American ideals bestowed upon white men. Yet, despite their honorable service, they were cast aside and overlooked by history. This concludes today's episode. All right, that was dope. You know, that story, yeah, I'm a combat veteran myself, and that story really kind of, it's a great summary of the battlefield experience, right? You don't know what's going on. It's confusing. You know, you can't remember everything, but you remember some main points, all right? This concludes today's episode. We will see this theme again, repeated, of patriotism, sacrifice, and betrayal. It's repeated again and again in the mistreatment of African-American servicemen and women. It is my hope that this podcast can help shed light on the unsung valor of black men and women who experience the horrors of combat on the battlefield, only to face similar experiences on the home front. All right. Woo! That was a great conclusion, huh? All right, y'all. Hey, I'm going to do a quick housekeeping note again. Please remember, subscribe. I'm constantly working on getting better. I believe we're the best, most well-rounded history podcast out there. We don't have the best production. We don't have fancy equipment, but we have one person and a team, actually one host and a team that researches and that is dedicated and passionate to telling true history. Thank you so much for joining us. Please subscribe, rate, review us, follow us on social media. Remember, IG at Ape Academy Podcast, a.p.e History Pod. Also, we're on TikTok, all right, at Ape Academy Pod. All the sources will be in the show notes. Our next episode is coming soon. I'm trying to be more consistent in 2024. We're coming back with some good stuff. God bless y'all. Stay safe. Ape out.